Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we take a look at computers, your computer and mine, with Peter Green of Infostar.com. You know, they can be a wonderful resource, whether you're for work or play, but like anything else, we need to make sure they run well and know what to do when they aren't running well. So Pete comes by once a month to talk about it, and great to have him back and great to have you listening in. Questions for him, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And we'd certainly love to hear from you. And Pete, welcome back.
Always great, Larry. Summertime.
Oh, it's summertime. The living's easy. And there are people out there shooting video, and they're taking lots and lots of pictures.
Keep it away from the water.
And yeah, and they're filling up their storage.
Yeah.
And wondering, what do I do here? I want to save. I don't want to lose all this. I don't want my computer to crash. And I want to save my photos. I want to save my videos and everything else for that matter.
And they're taking up more and more capacity, and the storage is getting bigger and bigger all the time. You know, now it's not unusual to see specials advertised on 3-terabyte drives. Yeah. You know, and who would have thought of that, you know, 5 years ago, you know, for, you know, plus or minus within the $100 price range, which, you know, is incredible.
Unbelievable.
But if you look at the file sizes, videos, high-definition videos, I mean, I don't even know if people realize this, but like a Blu-ray video for a feature movie is roughly in the neighborhood of, you know, let's give a range, 30 to 50, you know, gig of data on a disc. And a typical DVD is, I believe it's like 4.8, something like that. And then, you know, the dual layer, if you have a drive that does dual layer, then you can use a media that will support like 9 gigabytes on a DVD. But Blu-ray takes it to the next level. And Blu-ray's been out for a long time. So, who
knows what's coming down the...
Right. But what's really been going on in that area is a lot of streaming, you know, online streaming. Because the broadband, the internet speed has gotten faster to the end point. So a lot of options. Options in terms of spinning hard drives, but they're mechanical and they can fail. Larger capacity thumb drives, but, you know, what are you trying to put on them? You're seeing, you know, thumb drives being advertised 32, 64, 128 gigabytes. And why are those the numbers? Why aren't they 10, 20, 50, or 100? It's because you go back to the basics of a bit is a 0-1, a byte is 8 bits, and then a kilobyte is 1,024, and it's really multiples of 1,024, and that's why you get the denominations of 4, 8, so and 16, and so forth, and that's just how that works. As far as storage capacities, you know, the hard drives are getting bigger and bigger. Again, they're spinning. So regardless of what you pick, you need to keep your eye on the evolution of the media. And you don't want to get caught in a position where you put all your stuff in one basket, one media, and then all of a sudden the support for that media goes. What's a perfect example of that? If you were storing stuff on 3.5-inch floppy drives,
so long.
Where are you today? Okay. You're going to have to go looking for a 3.5-inch drive and making sure you have the interface that supports it on the computer, and then you're going to have, you may have issues. So 5.25-inch, where are those today?
Yeah.
8-inch drives and so forth. So, you know, the evolution of the hardware along with the software will allow you to transition over time. Just keep your eye on it. So if you're buying a terabyte hard drive or two, or you're buying DVDs and you're backing them up to DVDs, you know, check and make sure that they work, you know, that they're kept in a good environment, that they're not treated in an ill way. And what do I mean? Well, you don't want to throw sawdust on them or play with sand. You don't want to be putting water on them. Water has minerals in it and can create issues. So you want to be kind to them. You want to treat them like you would treat yourself to be comfortable. And as you fill the media that you're using, you know, move on to the next one. And if you feel like you don't have, don't rely on one copy that it's good. You should be having at least two.
So maybe you're saying two hard drives? A couple
of hard drives. And the hard drive formats have changed, too. We went from, ST509 or something like that, SCSI drives and different versions of SCSI drives and IDE drives and SATE and ESAT, which is external, and then different derivatives of SATA, which has to do with speed and how fast you transfer files. So the bigger the files and the more current you are with the hard drive technology, the faster those transfers occur.
In addition to that, would it make sense to, I mean, if you got a lot, to go up on the cloud?
That's another option. But again, keeping your eye on, number one, how much capacity do you need?
Mm-hmm.
And number two, making sure that you're tuned in to this, that service is good and valid and continuing, because there is no guarantee that they will continue to be around.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you put stuff up in the cloud, do you have a backup to what's in the cloud? Because it is susceptible to being lost. A good case in point, I was backing up a website, and they had a manual way of doing the files, and then they had this wizard. And I clicked on the wizard because it said, hey, it's going to do everything for you. So I clicked on it, and I waited, and I waited, and I waited. And then I killed it after about 4 hours and went home, and I thought, what's going on? So let's try this again tomorrow. Did it the next day, and I waited and waited. And after about an hour and a half, I thought, you know what? I'm going to pick up the phone and call. Well, it turns out that the company had a limit on how much that wizard would do for you.
Oh,
and they didn't tell you anywhere.
Oh.
They didn't tell you that if your data capacity exceeded 3 gigabytes, that it wouldn't work. And I suggested you might want to put that somewhere. Instead of, you know, I had no idea how long and exactly what they were doing. So I was going to be picking up the phone anyhow and saying, can you, you know, detail me what's all being covered? So, you know, dealing with cloud things has issues too. And you should not be afraid to pick up the phone and ask and deal with tech support, because that's what they're there for. And don't rely on it just being in the cloud that someone else is doing it for you, that's the end all. That you should be doing it yourself as well.
So if you got a hard drive and you're in the cloud and you're keeping up on the technology as it changes.
And migrating what you've...
And migrating as it goes along.
You should be safe.
All right.
Yep. Now, I got another point about backups as related to data recovery. Because sometimes doing backups things aren't always the issue. It's like maybe you lost something, or maybe you're trying to pry under the hood and see if you can find something that was in your data. And there are tools out there that allow you, and they're free tools, and then there are ones that you can pay for. A good example is a company, it's called, I wrote it down for us, and I'll post it up on my website in the next 24, 48 hours. But it's called Wondershare Doctor Phone, DR.FONE. And they make a product, and it's not inexpensive, but keep in mind it's for disaster recovery and dealing with backups. So it allows you to work on recovery as well as doing backups of your smartphones and your iPads, your iPhones, your Android phones. And I needed something. I somehow deleted a phone, but I didn't want to go through the pain of doing a backup and grabbing the backup and restoring. I know you know about iPhones. And I don't know if you've ever done this, but Apple's not real good about dealing with backups. They make a backup for you, but they don't give you the multiple opportunities to. So aside from that, you could use this product to actually look at your data. So I looked back in the history of my messaging and my phones, and I was able to recover the phone phone number that was deleted. And when I plugged it in, then all the messages popped back up on my phone from the conversation.
Oh.
So, and I used the trial version, and they say it was $99. And I said, well, I don't need to buy it. And they said, oh, please buy it. Come back, and we'll give it to you for $59. So don't always, you know, pop on the first, you know, thing that you're going to pay for it, because they might be, you know, offering you a discount down the road. And then there's another product called Macrium Reflect, which is kind of like a ghosting utility. And ghosting has been used for a very long time in the industry. And basically, that's making a backup of a hard drive in a system that makes a mirror copy. So you could take that hard drive and take the original hard drive out and put the one that you ghosted, put it in the machine, and it would fire right up because it's a perfect duplicate of it. So this Macrium Reflect software, so it's Macrium Reflect, will allow, and again, they have free versions and they have paid for versions, but the free version will actually allow you to back up a drive. So you put the second drive in the system, or you hook it up USB or whatever, and you say, hey, I want to take C and make it D, or, you know, and it works. And so there are products out there for free. And like I said, backups is not always necessarily dealing with full backups, but it can be dealing with just partial access to data.
There we go. Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest today, talking with him about, well, backing up your computer and all kinds of computer issues, actually. You can join us online by emailing us at talk@WPR.org. Go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mealer Show. All our phone lines are filled, so let's go to Ann in Sparta here. Ann, thank you for calling. Hi.
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 I'm having trouble with Hewlett-Packard Windows 7. All of a sudden, when I go into my pictures, instead of getting a new folder, all I can get is a compressed zip folder. The plain folder just disappeared.
Hmm.
I've gone through every setting I can find. I've switched things around until I panicked because I thought I lost everything, and I finally got it back, but I still cannot get just a plain folder. And what I don't like about the compressed is it doesn't open a folder to all your pictures in it. It opens it up to all the text, and you have to hit each one separately to see what's in there.
Hmm.
It just doesn't display all of your pictures.
Have you ever used Windows Restore? Have you tried that at all?
I was going to, but the person who worked on my computer said they don't really like for you to do that.
Well, it has no effect on your data files.
Okay.
And unless you've installed, what happens is basically the Windows Restore function deals with the Windows operating system and what's been set up in it. So if there are any inadvertent changes that were made and you want to go back in time, you're able to pick a restore point and basically go back before the problem appeared. And I've had it where, you know, just doing an install of a program created changes in settings that made the computer not work, made it not go onto the internet and other issues. Okay. And once I went back, even undeleting the program didn't correct the problems. It was actually going back and restoring Windows to the point of before I even attempted to do the installation.
Yeah, I had gotten that far, and I got to the point where it said it would be restored, and all these dates came up. And
correct.
What worried me was if I went back far enough, was I going to lose everything after that date?
No, you don't lose any data. It has no effect on data. The only thing it has an effect on is anything that you've installed. So, for example, if you installed an Adobe update or if you upgraded your Windows Explorer or you're using Firefox and you happen to do that, all you'd have to do is rerun the install on that again. Now, what can be interesting is why did that change happen on your system?
Right.
There could have been something that installed that tripped it and made that change happen. And if you go back and you fix it and then all of a sudden something pops up and says, hey, I need to be updated, and then you run the update and then it goes back to the problem, you know what the culprit is.
Okay. The only thing that's been wanting to update constantly is Java and Adobe.
Yep. Yeah, they're kind of bugaboos. Because what's going on with them is because of all the smartphones and the iDevices that are out there and the mobile tablets and all this other stuff, is they're constantly putting little patches in to deal with whatever's just come out. And it can be very annoying because if there are a lot of release dates for competitive products, you know, and they didn't compensate for having them all at one time, you know, it's just like, hey, you got to update me.
There we go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Peter Green of InfoStar.com, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Kathleen Dunn has a new time slot, and it's 1 o'clock, and I hope you'll join her at 1 today. It's her weekly All Things Political segment. That's Kathleen Dunn at her new time at 1 o'clock. You're on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, talking with Peter Green of InfoStar.com, Larry Mueller here. Thank you so much for listening in today. Questions? I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. Lynette in Germantown, thanks for waiting. Hi.
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 You there?
Yes. What can we do for you?
Perfect timing. I have 5G available per month, and I've been consistently going over. And I just found out yesterday that I have a slow leak of data on my, computer, and I don't know where to begin to look for it.
Now, what's a slow leak? What do you mean by slow leak?
Well, the person who found it was via the hotspot. He had my hotspot going and my computer going at the same time, and I wasn't on the internet, but there was just a constant slow leak of bandwidth, and that's what's eating up my 5G throughout the month.
Oh.
So I ran AVG, and I checked, and I also ran Security Essentials, and neither one found anything.
So
I don't know where to go from here.
There is a try to remember the. I've got it on my my tips page. There is an application. If you go to InfoStar.com, and then on the left-hand side, you click on tips and go to the very last tip. It talks about getting rid of stealth programs, and I think it's called Nuber, something with security. But what it does is it allows you to see what programs are running in stealth mode that might be running without your knowledge on your system, and they expose them. And I also talk about using tools to get rid of them. One would be Malware Bytes has got that file assassin feature. So if you're able to locate the program that's running and identify where it is, and if it seems like it's hidden or under the radar and you can't tell on your system, but you've exposed it, you could use a tool from Malware Bytes like File Assassin to actually delete the file. And I talk about it in the tip about how to go about doing all that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're talking about some application that's running on your system that you know is causing...
That's the slow leak,
essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so again, where do we go? Where does she go?
Go to InfoStar.com. Click on tips, and the very last tip will talk about getting rid of stealth programs.
There you go.
Programs that almost like they, the real bad ones will say, hey, you know, pay me money and I'm going to make your computer fast because you've got a whole bunch of stuff that's slowing it down and it won't go away and it keeps popping up and then it eventually won't even let you get on the internet because they want your money and you're not responding to them. So they're just going to make life worse for you. Could be very frustrating.
Thanks, Lynn. Good luck. Judy and Hazel Green, hi to you.
Hi. I've got a really frustrating problem, and being an old grandmother, I'm not real tech savvy, but I've tried to be really careful about updating antivirus and anti-malware programs, and after I do that, I also always run the disk defrag. Well, the last couple times I've clicked on disk defrag and doing it exactly the way I've always done it, it's not there. The icon is there. I click it. If I go through, like, programs to accessories and system tools, I can click on it, and nothing happens.
Hmm.
It doesn't show up on the screen at all.
Which operating system are you using? Which version?
I've got Vista.
Vista. Okay.
Yes.
Well, I can give you a couple of options versus using what's in Vista. There is a product called Defragler. So it's D-E-F-R-A-G-G-L-E-R. And it's there is a free version of it out there. It works very well. I use it. I don't use it too often, but when I use it, it does what it's supposed to. It's also the company makes C-Cleaner, which is another good utility for cleaning up a lot of temporary files and cleaning your system registry. So
now I do use that one, but it seems that the computer it's slowed down to where it usually is before I was running a defrag, and the C cleaner doesn't seem to be making any difference there.
Okay, so it's the same company. So if you went back to their website, or if you just do a search on Defragler, you'll find it, and it's a real quick download. And I don't even use anything from Windows. That's what I would use.
Yeah, there you go. Good luck. Thank you for calling. And Grace in Bayfield. Hi. Grace, are you there?
Hey, am I in the air?
Yes, you are.
Hi.
Thank you. I have a Acer. It's an older, it's only a couple of years old, IBM laptop that my daughter used for a while without difficulty. And I've been using it, and the other day I went to turn it on, and the Acer logo comes up, and it says restarting Windows. Then it just goes to a blank screen. And I tried to do Control-Alt-Delete, and that doesn't do anything. And then when I finally just power it off and power it back on again, if I power it on very soon, it just goes to the blank screen immediately. But if I wait for a couple of hours, I get starting up Windows again.
Mm, okay.
And then it goes to a blank screen. So where do I start with?
Well, what you might want to try and start is see if you can get it into safe mode. There might be something going on where... maybe something happened with the video driver and it's just, you know, crashing. My first inclination would be you turn it off, you turn it back on, and you got to time it. And this might take you two, three times. But when you see that just right before it's going to be starting Windows, you hit the F8 function key, you know, probably 3-4 times, and you'll probably get it. And then it'll ask you, how do you want to start the computer? And you want to pick safe mode and let it try and load, you know, launch into safe mode. Hopefully it'll get there. And if it does, then just bring it up to the desktop. If you've got a password, you'll have to put it in and bring it up to the desktop and then shut it down and then reboot it and try and see if that helped. If that doesn't work, there is probably, it might need an operating system repair, which would require you to have the Windows disk, or there could be a hardware issue that it's simply struggling with. And, you know, those can be a little tricky to identify in laptops.
Yeah.
All right. So I hit the F8.
F8 key, right? It's kind of like right before you see
escape.
What's that?
Yeah. I was trying to do escape because it used to say it. On the older systems, it would say hit escape if you want to do whatever, you know. So,
yeah,
but I'll try
escape. And
just before the Windows comes up.
Yeah, just before it says starting Windows, you want to hit that F8 function key so it'll give you a menu of options for starting the operating system.
And there you go. And thanks. Yeah, good luck, Grace. Kind of lost her there. She broke up a little bit there. Dave in Appleton, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you.
Hi.
Crying over spilled milk here. We had my bride dipped a glass of milk onto an HP laptop the other night.
Oops.
And we were camping, so I couldn't do much about it except put a fan on it.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's toast, apparently.
You're not alone. That's happened with a variety of other liquids on other systems. What I try to tell people is related to when you spill something on electronics, whether it's a smartphone or an iDevice or a laptop or a desktop computer, is keep in mind that there are mineral deposits coming from the liquid. You don't see them, but they're there. I mean, we know in water it's there, and wine and so forth, and especially milk with all the vitamins. What happens is those deposits, even if you dry out the device, you've got potentially conductivity going on between the minerals that have been deposited on the electronics. So drying it out is not the only thing you really should be doing. You should be opening up the device and blowing it out. And
I tried taking the keyboard apart, and I think I made it worse because now the monitor is... it looks like it's booting up and everything, but I can't even see the monitor. Or just with a flashlight, I can read what it's doing.
Yeah. So, you know, you might have damage beyond repair to the laptop, but if you've got data files on the hard drive, if you don't attempt, you know, it's kind of a, it's a bit of a quandary because you want to try the laptop and see if it works, but you really need to look at it as a disaster recovery issue is related to the data that's on that hard drive, is that should be your primary objective rather than resurrecting the laptop is going, okay, I need to exercise the hard drive out of the system, and then I need to get the data off of that. And how do you do that? Well, number one is you can go online. They typically don't show you how. Well, you might have a laptop where you can open up a bay and pop it out. If the there are older ones where you had to remove the keyboard and then it would show you or it exposed the bay where the hard drive was and you'd have to unscrew a cover and then unscrew the hard drive. And then you'd have to
get the hard drive out.
Okay. So then you need
a
kit.
My wife's, and basically what it is all of her bookmarks that she wants. But okay. So, I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No, it's so then you're going to, if you're going to do any kind of recovery off of that hard drive, you need to hook it up to like a kit that would enclose or house that drive that would allow you to interface it to another system externally through like a USB port. And then you could hook it up to the other computer, and once you plug it in, it would, if the hard drive is still okay, it would be readable by that other system. And then you can
I need to find that kit somewhere? Or?
They have kits in you know, Office Max, Office Depot, Staples, Best Buy, you know, all the retail places, and they sell them online. Every now and then I buy, you know, whatever I'm missing off of eBay, and you can save a few bucks if you plan ahead, but most people don't plan ahead to have this happen.
Could you tell me what the kit is called? Just
It'll be an external hard drive enclosure, and it's going to be for the type of drive that you have, and depending upon the age of the drive, it's probably at least is it within a couple of years?
No, it's probably 6 years old, maybe.
6 years. It might be an enhanced IDE, or it might still be an SATA. And if you take the drive with you and go to the store, or if you look up the model of the computer online, it'll detail, you know, the specifications as related to the hard drive interface.
There you go.
And that way you'll know. Or you can take the drive with you, you know, just be careful and, you know, don't wave it around and drop it and bounce it off of the, you know, the curve or anything.
Run
like
a magnet by it.
Yeah.
There you go. Dave, good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest Larry Mueller here. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer, answering the phones for us today. Speaking of phones, you can join in. We have an open line at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Gertrude in West Bend. Hello, and thank you for calling. Yeah, good morning.
Good morning. On my computer, very often when I turn it off, before it shuts off, it says, "Are you sure you want to do this? Because someone else is using your computer, and there should be no one else. I'm the only one who has it. My husband never touches it, and I'm the only one who uses it. What is that about?"
There might be like a share setup on your computer where the drive is in technical terms, being allowed access to be shared by other users. So if your computer is the only computer, which version of the operating system are you using? Are you using Windows XP?
XP.
Yeah. In Windows XP, if you know, you can hunt around for it. What you would do is you would use Windows Explorer and right mouse and go to your C drive.
That's the thing, right mouse.
Yep. So you go into Windows Explorer and using the cursor, click on your C drive, and then you would right mouse click it. And if you click on share and it looks like it says it's being shared, you just simply unshare it.
Yeah, click it off.
That sounds simple. That's good. Now, I have just one more quick question. I have purchased Seagate's world most versatile hard drive, Free Agent GoFlex. Is that a good thing to save to protect all the stuff I have?
Sure. Free Agent is a name that they've given to their product for doing backups. So that's basically
what it is.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Good enough. Thank you very much for calling.
Now, I want to clarify one thing is related to shares. Sometimes it's not just the hard drive that's being shared, but folders on the drive. So sometimes there are programs that are set up to share folders without your knowledge. And a lot of people may not realize this, but, you know, when we were it's not as popular now. Well, maybe it is, but, you know, peer-to-peer networking – and basically the internet created this environment where all these hard drives would be shared and there were different applications for, they had a SETI project for, you know, sharing all the computers to, you know, power something, you know, doing that project. Another one is sharing music files, you know, the Napster, and there's a network called Views and LimeWire and on and on, BearShare. There are a whole bunch of peer-to-peer networks. When you download that software, they actually create a folder that is for the files that are being downloaded, but that folder is also being shared out. So when you download a network file from one of those peer-to-peer, you know, networks, it's on your computer. Yeah, you might have the complete file, but unless you go and say, hey, I don't want to share this back, that file is actually being sent back out. So, you know, for those people who don't realize it, you know, that's how that works as well.
Yeah.
There you go, Gertrude. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Kay emailed us from Waterford. Wants to buy a new laptop to replace her current laptop that runs on XP. She doesn't want to go to Windows 8. Too many bad things she's heard about that. Any disadvantage to getting a new laptop with Windows 7, which I really like, when Microsoft has a newer operating system?
Actually, no. You can still get those. I've done it recently where they have, you know, versions of Windows 7 on them. You can also get one with Windows 8, and like I said, you know, in prior shows, you can download utilities to, you know, fix the interface to Windows 8 so it works more like Windows 7. And I've done that to a couple of machines, and they work just fine. If you're in an environment where your other computers are Windows 7, you know, sticking with Windows 7 is probably pretty good for now. But if you're moving on, you know, Microsoft is committed to fixing it because they've admitted their mistake back in April. So, you know, there'll be a Service Pack 1 coming out for it if it isn't already being tested, you know. But there are fixes to make Windows 8 behave the way it should be.
All right. Well, John in Milwaukee has access to a fully open, unlocked Wi-Fi connection, but still leery of using it because it's so open. He said, I purchased a small Wi-Fi router that has the ability to create a separate access point by bridging to the open Wi-Fi signal. Mm-hmm. My question is, if I set up the small Wi-Fi router, access point mm-hmm. with encryption and a password, and it bridges to the open Wi-Fi connection. Is it more secure than just connecting to the open Wi-Fi signal?
Well, if you think logically about the internet is being pushed out there, okay? It's being pushed out by landlines. It's being pushed out by Wi-Fi and so forth. So when it's being pushed out there, the security is that, hey, you're a user and you got a password. So now you're on it. So now your system's on it and you propagate that signal. That signal is not secure unless you lock down the security. So what he's pointing out is that, hey, I have access to this Wi-Fi signal that's just being freely broadcast, maybe by accident from an individual, maybe on purpose by a business, but it's out there.
Yeah.
It's unsecure. He gains access to it. He uses it. He's questioning his security.
Yeah.
Well, if he says, hey, I want a Wi-Fi through my setup, and I latch onto that, and then I create my own security, it's the same thing as when the original user logged on to the internet segment with a password, user and password, because that's their security. So if he creates his own secure environment within his setup, it's secure.
He's fine.
But if that connection goes away, he has nothing.
Yeah. No.
And the way these things happen is they happen on campuses, UW-Madison campus, campus in California, Florida, wherever, MATC, in schools. You know, I don't know about the public school system, but I know I've been in several public schools where there's Wi-Fi and pretty good bandwidth. Is they're broadcasting and they're using bridges and access points to propagate that signal, you know, maybe across a mile, maybe across 30 miles, and, you know, line of sight is allowing those signals to be stretched, and they have security for doing that. But if it's open and you latch onto it, you know,
there you go.
You have it.
Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest, and he is going to be with us right up until 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here talking with Peter Green of Infostar.com about your personal computer. We can talk Mac computers, too. Pete's had a lot of experience with Macs and can answer Mac questions just as well as not. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Aaron in Green Bay has a question for you. Aaron, hi. Thanks for waiting.
Hello there.
Hi.
I have a quick question. A while ago, I had put a new CPU cooler on my processor to replace the stock one. However, when I tried pulling the old one off, and inadvertently pulled the entire processor out of the socket while the zero insertion force lever was still down. Hmm. Ever since then, every so often, but never in a real consistent fashion, my computer would freeze, where I'd have to do a hard shutdown to bring it back up or hit the reset button.
Right.
And I was wondering if you'd have any suggestions for either fixing that or pointing out a problem I may have overlooked.
Well, the freeze is usually caused by some short.
All right.
And it hasn't reached a critical status where it's actually just like, you know, sizzling or shutting down your system or creating a chip to smoke, which I've actually seen happen. But the fact that the CPU got pulled out without it being disengaged, there's probably... Did you just reseat it that one time and that was it? You know,
I,
In other words, have you tried to reseed it multiple times?
Once after I put the cooler on,
right,
just to make sure that, okay, yes, all the pins are there,
right,
and it doesn't look like anything broke off.
Right.
But yes, I have done that once or twice before.
Okay. The only thing I would suggest is to maybe redo it one more time, but since you've experiencing that problem, is maybe just not with a lot of force, but, you know, just pushing down to make sure that CPU is, you know, inserted straight and flush, and, you know, maybe, you know, that issue might go away.
Okay.
Yeah, when you do something that's locked and you're dealing with, you know, pretty fragile electronic stuff, I don't know if a lot of people know what the underbelly of a CPU looks like, but when you flip it over, it's a lot of gold pins. And the gold pins are not very big. They're not very long. And they need to make that connection. And, you know, there's not a lot of distance that it's doing to make these connections. And what happened was the lockdown lever that was used to keep that CPU tight was still engaged when that CPU was pulled out, is what happened. So there could have been some, gold that was scraped off that, you know, was creating the issue. So it might be worth a try to do it again and see if that helps make it better.
Yeah. Give it a shot.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks a lot, Aaron. Kay in Eagle River. Hi.
Hi. How are you today?
Hi.
Great. Thanks a lot for calling.
Thank you. Question on my laptop. It's probably 4 or 5 years old, and when I have it at home, I've got that one specifically at home, and when I try to get on the internet, it takes forever, and I'm wondering if it's like if I have one too many firewalls on, or if I need to buy some sort of antivirus, if it's a virus, because I just can't seem to get on quick enough. I've tried to defrag it. I didn't know what to do.
Have you ever tried to clean the registry on the laptop?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I try to do everything I can, you know.
Okay. There's a utility called CCleaner, and if you download that and you go to clean your system registry, it'll find files that might no longer exist, but there are relationships with the computer trying to look for them. And that will bog your system down. There may have been software upgrades that didn't get completed properly, or they did, but they left baggage behind, and it's running interference. So what you can do is you can run that, and what I usually do is it'll ask you to back up the registry, and I usually back it up when I first do it and just give it a name with the date and at least know where it is, and then run through it, and then have it fix the problems. And then you might have to do it. You might have to do it 3 times before you get it, so there is nothing that comes up. And then try and reboot the system after that and see if the performance improves that way. The other thing is you might have multiple, a lot of programs that are running in the background that can also choke your system, slow it down. And which version of the operating system using is Windows 7?
XP.
XP. Well, if you in XP, if you type in, click on Start and then click on Run, and then type in MSCONFIG, and click on the and then hit Enter and then click on the Startup tab. In the Startup tab, just make note of all the different programs that are checked off that are running,
and then
uncheck them. And I have some stuff on my tips page, but you could just as well go on the internet and search and see what might be necessary for you to have in the Startup tab. But the other thing is to maybe get rid of some of the obvious ones. For example, HP likes to install, you know, if you had, I'm just throwing these things out there. If you had an HP printer, HP likes to install their stuff so that they're calling the mothership every time, you start up your computer and looking for updates from HP and dealing with just running your printer in the background. You might not even be running it. So just, get rid of stuff like that. There might be a Google update. You don't need Google updates. You can, trust me, you don't just need to have Google, saying I'm going to be throwing in an update every day. Adobe updates, Java, just a variety of things that are looking to update your system. You just don't need to have those running. You can go out and seek and get those yourself. And that'll speed it up too. So once you make those changes and then apply them, it'll ask you to reboot and then reboot your system and, see how it reacts. And if there's something that you feel is necessary, you go back to the checklist and see if you can figure out which one it is. And, might be a little trial and error, but it'll probably run a lot better.
Yep. There you go. Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling, Kay. Hubern in Mequon, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
Yes, I have a Sony laptop, and I have Windows 7. But my big problem right now is whenever I go to email, I have the cursor is not there to move my page up or down. And that's the only place I have a problem.
Hmm. Okay.
So the cursor disappears with your email, with your email only?
With the email only in the right-hand corner there?
Mm-hmm.
So I can't, the page stays there. I can't move it up and down. But if I shut my computer off and put it to sleep, and when I get it back up, then I get that cursor back. But when it goes to sleep, it disappears.
So it's only with your email.
Just the email, that's all.
Is it web-based?
Are you using, Google Mail, Gmail, Yahoo Mail, or are you using...
Google Gmail, right.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I have.
You might want to... Which browser are you using to access it? Are you using Internet Explorer, using Mozilla?
Internet Explorer.
Okay. A couple of things. One is you might want to try and upgrade your Internet Explorer to a new version and see if that fixes it. And the other thing is go ahead.
I did update to the latest they have about a couple months ago.
Okay.
And since that, I've been having this problem too.
Then what I would also recommend, and we've talked about this many, many times, is... I would download Mozilla Firefox and also Google Chrome and see how your system and your access to your email works, with those. I can tell you for a fact that I've had a system which was problematic using remote access, using a product called Log Me In to... from a home to an office. And the problem was that Internet Explorer had memory issues where it would not allow the program that was run remotely on the office computer from home because it was just chewing up too much memory. And by switching the browser, allowed everything to work just fine.
Oh.
So, and they didn't even know that.
Yeah.
So I called them back and I said, hey, I figured out the fix to it. And they're like, wow, thank you. So I'm just saying that putting all your eggs in one browser is not a good thing. And when you develop problems after an update, one is to go back. And that's a perfect example of using a restore feature in Windows, is to go back in time and say, hey, that update didn't work. I want to go back to the way it was.
Thanks, Hubert, for calling. Appreciate your call. We got an email from John and Kimberly. This is about storage and saving and so forth. He uses a free program called Carbon Folder, keeps all his personal data and downloads under a specific folder, and uses Carbon Folder to copy that folder and all the subfolders to a second drive. It only copies the data that have changed or been added after the original is made, so concurrent backups are relatively quick. This has saved my data several times. There's a paid for version that will keep the data copy current automatically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are other programs out. I mentioned, I think probably, I don't know, 2-3 years ago, there's a program called Yadis, Y-A-D-I-S, does a similar thing. There are also online services that do that. And what's nice about the online services is that you can buy them fairly inexpensive, you know, for like an annual fee, and you can usually look for deals on these things. And I will enlighten people that when you find a product, go out and look for an online coupon,
mm-hmm.
you know, yeah. or maybe not take up the first offer and you might save a few bucks. But there are products and services out there allow you to back up multiple systems. So if you're dealing with family systems, you can get programs that have the features that were just mentioned, along with being able to use them across multiple computers.
There we
go.
Which
is pretty handy.
Pretty handy. We're going to take a look at the news from National Public Radio coming up next. But, of course, stay tuned. Peter Green of Infostar.com going to be with us right up until 12:30 today. Right after the news, he's going to share this month's list of useful websites. And we got the top 10 list, and that'll be coming up right after a look at the news. Stay with us. I hope you'll join Kathleen Dunn today at 1 o'clock. She is, it's her new time slot, and it's her weekly All Things Political segment. So tune in at 1 o'clock for Kathleen Dunn and her new time. And I'm glad you're tuned in right now because Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest today, and with so many of us using computers every day at home or work or wherever, we rely on them a lot. Pete's an independent computer consultant, comes by the first Monday of every month to help us with all of our computer problems. And Peter, thanks again for spending time with us today.
Always great, Larry.
We have a top 10, you know, every month have a list, a top 10 list of great websites. And what have you got for us today?
Okay, they're all up on, if you go to infostar.com, and if you go to the top left and click on current top 10 or top 10 archives, scroll down to today's date, they're all there. The first one is called Makers, makers.com. And it's really about trailblazing women of today and tomorrow. It's showcasing stories, both people that you, women that you know and ones mm-hmm. that you do not.
Yeah.
Number two is called reversephonenumberfinder.com. And what's interesting about that is you can put in your phone number. It'll basically go back and tell you the provider. So, for example, with my phone, I plugged it in, and it told me the original provider for the service were, you know, was, I think it was like U.S. Cellular.
Mm-hmm.
So it was accurate. It's just interesting. It's another tool that's out there that someone's engineered for use. Number three is called Odesk, odesk.com, for hiring freelance information technology people. So maybe you have a small project and you need help, and that's a place to look. Number four is called thrivehere.org, so thrivehere. And it's an economic development partnership for the 8-county Madison region, so this area.
Mm-hmm.
With a vision to create a dynamic environment where people and business prosper. So it's definitely something worth checking out. Number five, it's been talked about by people that have called in, and it's very popular for use in business applications, personal use, and also for schools, for people delivering their papers and so forth. It's called Dropbox.
Yeah.
And there are also applications available for Android and iPhones. And it's for getting your files, whatever files they might be, from computers to devices, you know, tablets, phones, whatever. It's definitely worth checking out.
We actually use that in my radio class that I teach.
There you go.
It works really, really well.
Yeah. Number six is called StarPulse.com. Just like it sounds, and it's keep up with the news and info on your favorite celebrities, movies, TV, and more in the entertainment industry. Number seven might come in handy if you're looking for a place to stay in over 192 countries and 34 plus thousand cities, and it's called Air, A IRBNB.com. And if you're a gamer, and if you don't know about this, now you do. It's called freegames.com. Good common name.
Mm-hmm.
Good organized place to find and download free games. Number 9, if you're just getting started with Windows 8 or if you're looking at Windows 8 and want to know more about it, issues and so forth, it's called 8 Forums. So it's EIGHTForums.com, and it deals with Windows 8 experience and helping with issues. And number 10, the NHL just ended, and again, the Chicago Blackhawks, second time in 4 years, take the Stanley Cup. So now, what's going on with the entire league? Well, you can
trades.
Check out mynhltraderumors.com and see what's going on.
And all those are on your site.
Yep, they're all there.
All there at infostar.com. Peter Green of infostar.com, our guest today. Great to have him along, and thank you for listening in. We have Harold next from Superior, so I want to go to him. Harold, thank you for waiting. Hello.
Well, hello, and thank you for taking the call.
You bet.
I could ask about 49 questions easily, or about 4 hours worth. I have a laptop, and I'm having so many issues with it that I'm thinking of either upgrading it or going to a new computer. I find out that my Ultima cannot be, the programs will not be transferred to Windows 8. You'd have to reinstall, and I've got about 400 or 500 programs. It's about a four-month shot to do that, and it never is the same, of course. And it's not nice. Ultimate and Pro will not upgrade. I just found that out. Mm-hmm. Happen to find that out. Anyway, what is your opinion of the Apple realm versus PC? I've got 30 years vested in in internet, or I mean in
PCs.
PCs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about Apple?
If you've got PC programs, you can run them on the Apple. There are solutions for that. There is Boot Camp, which allows you to reboot the Mac in a Windows environment, use it that way. Or you could get a product called Parallels, which will allow you to run the Mac, and you just simply run Parallels and run your Windows environment at the same time. I do that all the time, and that works well. So you basically allocate some of the hard drive space to running Parallels in the Windows environment, and you can still use your Windows programs if you want to, if there are ones that you can't get for the Mac and run on Windows. So you can have the best of both worlds. The hardware it costs more. Apple hardware costs more, but it's typically a higher performance that you're paying for, because the Apple products are at the high end of the spectrum for performance. So it's usually, the difference in cost is usually maybe a little bit with memory, but some maybe features on the computer, like maybe a different video card, some different memory, little difference in processor, but not all that much, size of screen, size of hard drive, but generally not like a huge range of CPU options, where in the Windows world, you can buy basically a single core, you could buy a quad core, and you've got this wide range of processors. Apple doesn't do that. And that's why, their price point for their hardware is typically at the higher level.
You get what you pay for.
Yeah, they're stable systems.
Very stable.
Not to say that they don't have issues, but, it's an appliance. And, as far as learning how to use it, they have Finder. Windows has Windows Explorer. They have versions of Office products for it, or you can use Google, products, to do whatever you want as far as, writing documents or spreadsheet, because Google has that, and you can, do that on your Mac if you want, or you can do it on your PC. It doesn't matter. So it really becomes an investment issue in terms of what do you want to invest in terms of the hardware, and what do you need for the software, and if you need Parallels, and you know, getting a version of Windows to run in Parallels, and then the software to install on it. So it works well as a solution. You can have a double-edged sword. I have a double-edged sword, yeah. And I enjoy using it that way. I don't know if you, Larry, do you use Parallels at all? Any experience with it?
Yeah, no.
Yeah, see, I've set it up several times, and it works seamlessly. It's a great product.
And
it allows me to use Windows. It allows other people I've set it up for to use Windows and to use Apple. So, you know, just goes both ways.
I just love the fact that the problems are so much fewer.
Yeah, you don't, you know, some we didn't mention, but we have talked about it as related to issues with antivirus, worms and stuff. You know, pretty rare.
Pretty rare with Apple. Harold, good luck. You're going to have to think about it a little bit, but so if it was me.
You can invest in the Apple, you know, the Apple Minis.
Yeah,
they're, you know, little box. You plug in the monitor, you wireless keyboard, wireless mouse. Yeah,
amazing.
You know, 500. I think they come with 500 gig hard drives, maybe even more now. You know, they change all the time. Price point is $500, I think, in that range. You get a monitor for $100. Comes with a keyboard and a mouse. The operating system. You can add an external DVD drive. And then you install Parallels on it, or you download Parallels, you know.
Yeah.
It works.
It works. It works great. We had an email from Charlie who says our internet provider interrupted our service with an interface that said there had been a report of malicious activity from their machines. When we called to find out what the report was about, after 20 minutes on hold and being cut off multiple times and asked what the malicious activity was, they wouldn't clarify but said if it happened three times, they'd terminate our service. I know at least two other people who have experienced this. Do we have some recourse on this? This is really weird, isn't it?
Yeah, if you call in, they should be able to tell you what they're having questions about.
Yeah.
That
doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
You'd think they'd want their customers.
Yeah, they to be informed. The customer has the right to be informed what's being questioned.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd get back on the phone to them.
You know, the other thing, like I said, that program that I have listed on my tips page can expose maybe there's something running that they don't even realize.
Yeah. And what's that again? What's the name of that?
I don't have my tips page in front of me, but something tells me Neuber, NEUBER. But it's on that last tip, and because basically their software exposes stealth programs.
Yeah.
It shows you what's running that you don't see, and you know it's a good thing to know what's running.
Here's an interesting Facebook question from Michelle, something I actually thought about too. I recently took possession of an Apple Air book, The Power Cord's Magnetic. I always thought magnets and computers didn't play well together. What's up?
You mean as far as the power cord and how that plugs in and...
Yeah, how it might, because it's magnetic, could it have some impact on the computer?
No, you know, they've probably engineered something as related to how that works. I have a MacBook Pro and it works the same way. They've probably just engineered something as related to the, you know, how that hooks up.
Yeah.
They've probably determined some kind of isolation in terms of strength of magnet and the quality of materials that they use in the construction of their product, that it's not even a question. The thing that bothers me, that has bothered me for Apple for a long time, they finally changed it, was going to the Lightning connector, because the old connector was very frustrating to plug in, you know, with the
Yeah.
It was almost like a razor or like a saw blade in a piece of plastic trying to, you know, shove it in a little hole. And if you look at the new Lightning connector, which is very small, very flat, can go in either way.
Yeah.
You know, it's very simple. You know, probably a 3-year-old could use it, but a 3-year-old could not use the old Apple connector.
Well, Maureen keeps getting suspicious Cloud 7 messages, and even when her antivirus software says it's okay, it comes back again. What is that?
I have not heard Cloud 7. May want to, you know, if it keeps coming back and you're using, you know, whatever antivirus software it is, you may want to take a look at their website and see if there are any alerts going on about that, and not just waiting to get information, but be proactive and go and see, you know, seek an answer to that. I have not heard Cloud 7 before.
Gary in Fitchburg, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I'm trying to determine, using my start menu and doing the MS config, what I want to start up and what I don't want to start up. And once I do the MS config, then it opens up and gives me choices as far as which way to do the startup after I go in and make changes. Which choice is the best choice there? I'm a little bit confused because there are three choices, I believe. I'm not at my computer, but
okay.
Well, I go in and I you know, uncheck things that I don't want to open, and then it says apply, and when I restart my computer, then there's some kind of message that says you need to do X, Y, Z. So which is the best way to restart when I which choice?
Okay. Well, what goes on, the reason when you go into MS Config, you're going into the system configuration file, and the startup tab has got all those checkboxes as related to programs that have been installed on your system, may or may not still be active. For example, if you have Microsoft Office on your system, you might have a checkbox for it. You don't really need that checked on, because when you go to run Word or Excel or PowerPoint, you're just going to go and run those programs. You don't need to have Microsoft Office overseeing your system after it starts up, just sitting there in the background chewing up CPU and memory on your system, because it's not doing anything for you. Real Audio might be another example of a program where when you go to use Real Audio, you know, you're actively making that choice. Do you really need it sitting there in the background waiting for you to say, hey, I'm going to use you? No. The antivirus program, on the other hand, yes, that's something you want running at startup. You want it running in the background. So that would be a checkbox that you would have. Do you want your video configuration utility, you know, running in the background? Probably not. Are you changing, you know, your video every day, or, you know, your screen resolution or your background? No. So there are utilities for when you install your monitor and stuff like that, or the display, that will just sit there and run in the background. So those are things that you want not running. You can, what I do is you write down the list. You can take a picture of it with print screen and using Paint and cut and paste, or just write down the list, write what's checked and not checked, and then just trial and error and see how your system performs. If it's asking you to put something back in, it's related to a program that is looking for it, but is it really something that you need? And if the answer is no, then just say no, and I don't want to see this message anymore, because there's usually a little box that says, do you want to see this again?
Here's my problem, though. There are three choices when you do the MS config. There's, you know, the different choices you can do when you restart your computer, and I'm confused about which one of those three.
Usually what I do is you click apply. Which version of Windows are you using?
Windows 7.
Okay. Usually you click apply, and then you click exit, and it says, do you want to reboot now or not? Usually I make sure I say no, because I make sure all my programs are closed, and then I just reboot the system. That's usually the choices that you have. And then when it comes back up, it'll say, you know, this was done with your system running MS Config. Do you want to see this message again? And you can click the little box, no. And
yeah, that's not my issue, though. There, when you do MS Config,
right,
there's one box, two boxes, there's three ways you can alter what's going on there with your choices. And there's ones in general, ones, you know, I don't know, I wish I was at my computer.
Was it like diagnostic mode or?
Yeah.
It should just be for general. You're not like in the troubleshooting mode, so you're just in the general operation of it.
There you go.
Yeah.
Good luck.
And that's the one that should be checked.
Yeah.
That because should that's be checked. You know, when you start it up, that's the mode it's in, so you should be fine.
Thanks, Gary, for calling. Appreciate it. Joanne in Eau Claire, let's go to you next. Hi, Joanne.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I need a new computer, probably a desktop. I currently have XP operating system. There are so many problems with Vista, and I'm told that Windows 8 is somewhat difficult to transition to. Of course, I'd prefer the latest technology, but I'm wondering what Peter's recommendations are.
Well, you can actually look at a Windows 8 system. They've talked about coming out with a fix to the operating system, but there's a product called Classic Shell. I've got it listed on Infostar.com in the top 10, I think I had it last month. It makes Windows 8 look and work like Windows XP or like Windows 7. So, and I set up a system with Windows 8 and I was going to give it to a person that had been using Windows XP and I was like, there's no way they're going to know how to do anything. So I installed the Classic Shell on it and they were just fine. Haven't heard from them since. And I checked up and they said everything's working fine.
So that can be downloaded? Classic Shell can be downloaded?
Yeah, it's free. And I suspect Microsoft is going to be coming out with either something like that, or they might even be buying them and not wasting their time and effort to reinvent the wheel because it's out there and it's proven.
Well, that would be great.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Peter.
Yep. And then also, if you check out, you know, 8 forums and do a little bit of window shopping, you know, in terms of issues, you might find some answers to questions about, you know, transitioning from XP to Windows 8. You can, you know, look at, I'm sure that's a popular question on their forum.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's listed on the top 10 from this month as well.
Okay, thank you.
Yep,
all
good
right.
Luck.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And did you know that July is National Hot Dog Month, by the way, Pete?
I love hot dogs. I grew up in New York, so Nathan's, you know, hey, that was...
Yeah, that's where...
After playing hockey, hot dogs and fries. Yep.
We have tomorrow on the show, sort of in honor of July being National Hot Dog Month and the 4th of July coming up and all that, we've got the author of Man Bites Dog... Hot dog culture. Hot dog culture in America. So there's a history of the hot dog, and which goes back a long time. It goes back a way long time.
And mustard's not that far behind.
No.
And I love mustard, too.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, Judith says you can't put ketchup on a hot dog. She's from Chicago, see? And Chicago...
You could put everything on a hot dog. Hey,
that'd be heresy.
I was at Summerfest yesterday, and it blew me away when I saw there was like this ultimate hot dog being sold at one place for $7.50. And I was like, that's got to be a crazy hot dog.
Pete, it's always a pleasure. Well, we're going to do the hot dog author, and then Mary Bergen's going to be along too to give us, tell us what to do over the 4th of July weekend. And you'll be back the first Monday of next month.
Yes, I will.
Thanks. Thanks
and
a lot, Pete.
Hope everybody's safe and don't spill wine or milk or anything on your laptops.
Peter Green of Infostar.com. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
We talk about issues in the news and topics that improve the quality of our lives.
Wait a second. I thought I lived in a democracy. I thought that I had rights. But most of those rights, or many of them, have been taken away from us, or we voluntarily have handed them over.
I want these kids off of my lawn, and I want it to stop sleeting and snowing. Those are the only two things that I ask right now.
Add your voice to the mix of lively guests with different perspectives.
The Joy Cardine Show, weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thank you to the corporate sponsors who help support WPR programs. Businesses like Madison Gas and Electric, Al Johnson's Swedish Restaurant, and Rittenhouse play a huge role in the success of WPR. For more information, go to WPR.org/sponsor.
Support also comes from Qualine Fence in Wanakee, a family-owned company specializing in custom-built dog kennels for residential neighborhoods and commercial pet facilities. Information on planning a fence at QualineFence.com.